Now, I can't promise that every single thing I'm going to have on the test will be on the review, but there's about 95% coverage, all right? Five functions of the executive branch, not necessarily any one individual administrator, to administer the law, to elaborate on the law, and increasingly within the last 50 years, this has become much more important than it was 50 years ago. I think I may have told you this story that Texas legislature had a tendency up until about the mid-1960s to try to spell everything out in the law. And the laws were extremely detailed and extremely specific. It didn't work worth a darn. Now, there are areas where they had quit doing that as far back as the 1900s, but in most areas, they passed extremely detailed legislation. Beginning about the 1960s, they authorized the agency and then gave the agencies broad guidelines in the law, but the specifics were fleshed out by rulemaking authority. So this has become much more important than it was 50 years ago. Clemency in Texas, we'll talk about that, is really, really, really very spread out. In some states, the governor has absolute clemency power, pardon, paroles, reprieves, commutations. True in Texas? No. First off, he has only one, I'll repeat this a couple of times, only one unlimited clemency function in Texas. He can issue one 30-day stay of execution per prisoner. Everything else, well, and in the area of paroles, he has no authority. End of sentence. He couldn't parole his mother. Nor his son, or anybody else. And everything else is subject to the orders or to the recommendation of the Board of Pardons and Paroles. In other words, I don't know if you like visual images. And I wish I were a great cartoonist. I can envision these things, but I can't draw them. Can you imagine the governor of Texas on an extremely short leash with a choke collar? Compared to the governors of other states, where does Texas governor rank in terms of formal power?
Limited. Very limited.
You can't get any lower, can you? He's tied at 49th with the governor of Nevada. And I ran across a real interesting paper one time comparing the powers of the governor of Texas with the powers of the governor of Nevada. And it's almost like the people who wrote the provisions conspired to figure out how to keep the governor of Texas. Does it really matter who's governor of Texas? Yeah, in one area, appointment. He can set the tone, appointments and legislative power, which is political leadership. The governor does have, but he has to share it, doesn't he? And he shares it with elected officials, other elected officials. And then there's the symbolic and ceremonial, which a lot of governors milk for everything it's worth. I'm going to be honest with you. Rick Perry milked that cow so hard that you could almost see the straw in the milk. You catch that analogy or not? It didn't even have time to digest. He was so busy. Got three types of agencies. Is this necessarily completely true anymore? Does the legislature really sort of blur the distinction between administration, regulation, and service now? Yeah. See, like Parks and Wildlife, it's both an administrative agency, a regulatory agency, and a service agency. More than 50 years ago, the legislature tried to keep those distinctions straight. It didn't work. Now, there are two basic models of administration. If we're looking at, say, New York, California, those are much more integrated or centralized administrative structures than you find in Texas. They're based more, New York and California are based more on the presidential model. Now, before I get too carried away, how many of you have had federal government? Okay. Do we have a truly, completely centralized presidency? No, the drafters of the Constitution wanted to keep the president under some degree of control too. So, although the president is a lot stronger administratively than, say, the governor of Texas, there's still a lot of limits. And is the current president of the United States discovering what those limits are? If you remember his campaign speeches, on day one I'll do this. Well, it's day now, what, 70-something? And it could be day 770-something, and some of those aren't going to happen because they require Congress to go along with it, they require the courts to go along with it, they require funding. All of those are, shall we say, little leashes that the Constitution puts on the president. But he has broad powers of personnel, budget, and policy. Now, can I pick on you, Stormy? You think you could write a short essay comparing the powers of the president and the powers of the governor of Texas? Now, let's do it real short. In terms of personnel, does the governor of Texas have more or less personnel power? Substantially less, right? We start off with the fact that the president doesn't have to deal with five other elected officials, each of which have a part of the executive responsibility, do we? And then two elected boards, and then the typical agency. How many agencies in Texas, and we'll play with this in a minute, how many agencies in Texas are headed up by officials that the governor can appoint and remove? Now, this is the easiest question I'm going to ask you all day long for a very simple reason. Yeah. How much removal power does the governor of Texas have?
None.
Zip. When he wants to appoint someone, and it can only be a person he personally appointed, right? He couldn't go in, Governor Abbott couldn't go in and remove from office someone that Perry had appointed. Constitution doesn't give him that power. He can only remove the people that he personally has appointed. And that would be, at this stage of the game, probably two-thirds of the officials that have been appointed. But who's got to agree? Two-thirds of the Texas Senate. That's a pretty good leash, isn't it? Now, that particular provision has been in the Constitution for over 30 years, older than most of you. And I won't get in any trouble by asking who might be older than that. Okay, none of my business. I think we can guess that right. How many times has the governor of Texas removed any of these officials in that 30 years?
None.
Now, I'm going to take that shaking of the head as none,
no.
Not I don't know.
None.
Not a lot of removal power, is it? So let's take a look at this thing. In addition to the governor, now the lieutenant governor has no administrative power. Doesn't head up an agency, really. But he does. Now, is that's not a completely accurate statement. I made that statement in class one time, and I had a very sharp student said, "Mr. Waddell, that's not exactly correct." Well, I'm going to tell you something. I never get my underwear in a knot when somebody tells me I'm wrong on something. I listen to them. They might be telling me the truth. He said, "Isn't the lieutenant governor a co-chair of the Legislative Budget Board and the Legislative Audit Committee?" Yeah. Isn't that an agency? Yeah. You're right. I should have said, does not head up an executive agency. But he does help head up Legislative Audit Committee, the Legislative Budget Board, And those are pretty important, aren't they? So what does the Attorney General do?
Child support.
I'm sorry. Other than you and I will just talk about formal powers, we won't be snide. He's the chief civil lawyer. Now, if we compared the Attorney General of Texas with the Attorney General of New York, what would the big difference be? Attorney General of New York supervises, is charged with supervising the criminal prosecution area of New York's establishment. Remember, I made the comment about Law and Order, the movie, the TV series Law and Order. They always talk about clearing it with the state's chief prosecutor. Who's the chief prosecutor in Texas? There isn't one. Nobody supervises local district attorneys except the voters. Now, believe it or not, there's some serious thought given to changing that, because there have been some district attorneys who really bent the law a lot. And the reason the legislature's thinking about doing something about it is when they get sued, who ends up paying the bill? The state. Because they're acting in the name of the state. So maybe somebody ought to be in a position to supervise them, and if they're way out of bounds, have them removed from office. Now, if you wanted to remove a district attorney, what's the only way in Texas to remove a district attorney?
Impeachment.
You got it. Say it.
Impeachment.
Yeah, impeachment by the legislature and removal by the legislature. They're a district official. That's why they're called district attorneys. And that's why the state is responsible. If it was a county attorney, the county could be sued. But the county can't prosecute for felonies. Comptroller of Public Accounts. That sounds like a boring job, doesn't it? Take the money in, take the money. But where's the big power for the comptroller? And we're going to see that play out in the next less than 60 days. Now, you won't be in my class when this happens, so just pay attention. The Senate is doing some kind of mathematical, I call it, well, Joe Strauss called it Enron math, where you count the same money twice. What if the comptroller says, sorry about that, Tonto, that won't hunt. That budget will not meet the requirements because you're counting the money that you're delaying the payment of the money so you can count it now and spending it now too. Uh-uh. What would happen if the comptroller refused to certify, assuming they adopted the Senate's version, and I don't think the House will. The House passed its version the other day, or is ready to pass its version. The Senate passed its version. It went to the House. The House substituted its version. Sometime this week, the House will vote on the House version, and they're very different. It'll go back to the Senate, right? Which will not agree, and they'll have to appoint a conference committee. But let's assume the conference committee picked the Senate version and the comptroller refused to certify it. What are their options? Redo it, or overturn him by a 4/5 vote of both chambers. And you think the House would agree to do that?
No.
Well, if you end up with no budget, what would have to happen?
You have to approve it.
Governor's going to have to call a special session, right? That could get bloody. Commissioner of Agriculture. Now, what's the real funny glitch with the Commissioner of Agriculture for Texas? Do they really regulate the entire Texas agricultural economy? Or is it kind of on the margins? What's the biggest function, Ms. Dang? What's the biggest function of the Commissioner of Agriculture in Texas? Anybody remember? Certification of weights and measures. Now, would you run for an office, Commissioner of Weights and Measures? Should it be elected? Or should that be kind of a minor functionary job that the governor just appoints somebody to? Now, what makes the Commissioner of Agriculture's position different from all the rest of those that were listed up there is it's not a constitutional office. It's a statutory office, which means the legislature can change it, right? And in fact, one legislator this session was thinking about, I haven't checked to see if he actually did it, introducing a bill to abolish the office of Commissioner of Agriculture as an elected office and make it an appointed office. It wouldn't change the function of the agency any, but it'd save us the money of having to vote on the office. And changing the name from Commissioner of Agriculture to the Director of Weights and Measures. Commissioner of the General Land Office. Now, that wouldn't make any difference if Texas didn't have any public lands, would it? But you know what's in what Texas... Sorry about that, choked to death. What Texas and Alaska have in common? Besides being big. When both Texas and Alaska joined the Union, they got to keep their public lands. So there's a lot, hey there, Angelique, there's a lot of land in Texas that is owned by the state of Texas. Now I got good news and bad news. The good news is we get royalties off of that oil and gas that's produced on public lands. The bad news is we ain't getting as many royalties as we were, and that's why the budget's in kind of a bind right now. Two elected boards, the Railroad Commission, true or false?
True.
Well, let me give you the question first.
You gave me the question.
The Railroad Commission regulates the railroads in Texas.
True.
No.
You can't tell me true and then go false. Is it true?
No.
No? Okay,
no.
It's false.
Yeah, see, everybody believes the Railroad Commission, and I'm not picking on you really, okay? Yeah, I am, but
yeah.
Railroad Commission, everybody, oh yeah, they regulate the railroad. No, they don't. What is the most significant single industry in Texas? You learned that at the beginning of the semester.
Oil and gas.
I think you said it.
Oil and gas.
Petroleum. And the Railroad Commission is responsible for regulating the production and distribution and transportation of oil and gas, of mineral products in Texas. So if somebody should jump on you and say, what is the most important single agency in Texas with regard to the economy? I think you could probably say the Railroad Commission and be honest. And they're elected, aren't they? Well, that sounds good. The people can control them. Well, A, if most people don't know what the Railroad Commission does, and B, where do they get most of their campaign finances, funds? Oh, how many of you ever contributed a dime to anybody running for the Railroad Commission? If you lined 100 people up at random, how many of them do you think would have ever contributed a dime? But who does? In whose interest is it? The oil and gas interest, right? You look at the campaign finance reports of oil and gas railroad commissioners, and 90+% it's closer to 99% to be honest, of their money comes from oil and gas industry interest. Now, how many of you remember an old adage that you shouldn't bite the hand that feeds you? You think that applies to railroad commissioners? You got a watchdog that you feed, are they going to growl at you when you walk into the backyard?
Yes.
Are they going to wag their tail and go? If you've got a mental image in your head, just think of the railroad commissioners as the watchdogs. And every time the oil and gas interests come up to them, it's that image will stick with you, won't it?
Yeah.
State Board of Education. Now that's B-O-R-D, not B-O-A-R-D. How many of you have ever heard of any of the candidates running for the State Board of Education? That's what I thought. So what tends to happen is the people who get elected to the State Board of Education are the ones that appeal to a small segment of the society that have some really interesting views about what ought to be done on education. Several years ago, a vote came up on a provision to be added to the science curriculum of Texas, which would have required all science teachers to basically teach creationism as a part of the unit of science. We can't deal with Darwin's theory of evolution. We can't deal with plate tectonics. You know, it all just happened, and Jesus rode into Bethlehem on a dinosaur. That's stretching it, but you got the point. All right, the governor gets to a point. Secretary of State, Adjutant General. What's the Adjutant General do, Ms. Pope?
Oh, no, I wanted you to tell me that.
Say again?
I don't know.
All right, heads up the Texas National Guard. Does the governor of Texas have absolute unlimited authority on the Adjutant General? No, he can appoint anybody the Department of Defense says is eligible for the job. Now, how can the Department of Defense maintain, or the federal government maintain, that much control? I got another little adage for you, Angelique. Have you ever heard, he who pays the piper calls the tune? All right, let's use the modern version of that. The guy with the quarters determines what the jukebox plays. Never heard, you don't know what a jukebox is either, do you?
I do.
Okay. That's all right, I understand. Not too many people, cafes or bars, have jukeboxes anymore. They're considered antiques. I guess I am too, but who pays most of the cost for the Texas National Guard? Federal government. And, I mean, you can go ahead and appoint anybody you want to the Adjutant General, but we don't pay for it unless we control who's doing it. All right, moving right along. Commissioner of Insurance, Commissioner of Education, Commissioner of Health, and the Director of the Department of Housing and Community Affairs. Those are the only officials that the governor gets to appoint, subject, of course, to Senate confirmation, but can he remove any of them? Well, he can recommend their removal to the legislature, and if two-thirds of the Senate agrees, they can be removed. Remember, a very short leash. And then we're not even going to talk about how many appointed boards. There's well over 150 of them. Could any of you be governor? Well, right, I think only two of us qualify age-wise right now, over 30. 30 or older. 5 years residence, U.S. citizen. Can anybody make a long-time living out of being governor? We've had very few people elected governor of Texas who depended on their salary. Rick Perry did. They get a house. It's called the governor's mansion, and we provide them with transportation. Okay, we're going to run over this because we've already done it. Compared with other states, the governor of Texas is exceedingly weak, but he does have some legislative powers. He can call special sessions, he can veto items, and he has an item veto. Does everybody know what an item veto is? It's a veto of any single item in an appropriations bill only. Got it? And he can address the legislature. He can declare emergencies. Now, probably about the only thing that the declaration of an emergency does is change the order of business on what the governor has proposed. His clemency function, remember what clemency is? Pardons, paroles. Now, let's talk about the limits on the governor's clemency power. One, he has no parole power at all, right? How many of you remember that? Let's try it again. Can I see some sort of affirmative response? How many of you realize that the governor has no parole power, period? End of sentence. Shares the rest of his clemency functions with the Board of Pardons and Paroles, except one. He does have one unlimited clemency power. He can grant a 30-day stay of execution, one per person. And I told you a very sick joke about that. Do you remember it?
Yeah.
The guy sitting on death row. The warden comes in and says, I got good news and bad news. How many remember that one? You remember the jokes better than you do the stuff I cover, don't you? Oh, well. That's the way it goes. How much budget power does the governor have? If we compare the budget power of the governor of Texas with, say, the governor power, budget power of the governor of New York, would he be stronger or weaker? Who proposes the budget for the state of New York? Governor. Who proposes, really, the working budget for the state of Texas? Legislative Budget Board. Since 1991, the governor's only recommended where they would want to see things changed with what the LBB has proposed, right? He has an item veto. And can he move money around?
No, which one?
Only if the Legislative Budget Board agrees. How tight do you think that leash is on the governor budget powers? Does that analogy begin to work in your mind? You just see that leash. He's got a leash on his budget power. He's got a leash on his clemency power. Do you understand why we say that compared to other governors, he ranks about 49th? Someone said you could do away with the office of governor in Texas and nobody would probably notice for a week or two. We've done the Attorney General. What's the most important function of the Comptroller? Budget estimates and the right to approve or certify the budget. Now that doesn't always mean a whole lot unless, do you think the legislature is totally cognizant of the Comptroller's budget certification responsibility? Oh, hell yes. No question. And in the last 50 years, all the comptroller has to mention is, if you keep the budget with this provision in it, I can't certify it. And they go, yes, sir, we'll take care of that immediately. Because the other possibility is having to go come back and pass a new budget. We already talked about the Commissioner of Agriculture and the Commissioner of the General Land Office. I'm not going to do it again. These are the ones that the governor gets to appoint. We've already talked about them, right? Don't need to do it again. Am I going to ask you what the Commissioner of Health does? No. Can you figure it out? Runs the health department. Commissioner of Education. Now, does the Commissioner of Education really run the Texas Education Agency? He administers it, But when the legislature writes the laws dealing with education in Texas, how much discretion do you think they give the Commissioner of Education? It's a pretty short leash. Now, this, we haven't really talked about the typical agency in Texas, have we? The other 150-plus agencies. Multi-member board appointed by the governor, membership divisible by three, unless the legislature decides to change it, six-year overlapping terms. And with only a handful of exceptions, membership on one of these boards is not a paying position. It's a freebie. Now, why would anybody take a responsibility like that?
They want to get into politics?
Feel a need for public service, yeah. Now, if I tell you that roughly three-quarters of all the boards and commissions in Texas are licensing or regulatory agencies that license or regulate a particular profession or a particular business, and they are, and you happen to be in that business, do you have a real interest in who's on that board? In fact, would you maybe be interested in being on that board to make sure that they don't pass any regulations or rules which don't work well for your business? Is that necessarily good? Could you argue both sides of that? You wouldn't want a board of nursing that was passing rules and regulations that would damage the nursing profession, right? But on the other hand, you want them to look out for the public's interest too, don't you? Have I got most of your attention for a second? That's why a few years ago the legislature came up with this idea of putting people on all of these licensing boards who represented the general public as well as the people who represented specific areas of interest. And when I showed you the Texas Board of Nursing, we did a thing. We walked through it, right? There were several members who represent the general public. Their responsibility when they're on that board is to blow the whistle anytime they're coming up with a proposal that might be not in the public's best interest. Does it work? For the most part, yeah. There are probably some areas you could point to where that could be improved. Governing, I'm going to take off on a tangent for just a minute. Governing is an art form as well as anything else. And anybody who thinks you can reduce it to just absolute straight dictates is eating happy berries. Fair enough? And if you happen to be on the Texas Board of Nursing, 95% of what you're going to deal with will be dealing with the internals relating to nursing. Which schools can offer nursing programs, what the standards will be, what the faculty requirements need to be, what courses need to be taught, right? Are you going to be looking out for the interest of the public at the same time?
Yes.
Generally, the answer is yes. You can pick examples where that's not the case, but generally the answer is yes. And I have unrestricted admiration for people who are willing to volunteer their time, energy, and efforts to serve on these boards and commissions. They have the public interest at heart most of the time. There are some agencies where we've decided that isn't necessarily the case, and I'll give you an example of that, the insurance industry. At one time, we had a commissioner of insurance who was picked by a three-member board of insurance, but of the three members, two represented the insurance industry. And whenever there was a choice between representing the public interest and the interest of the companies, they took the company. Because after all, They had an interest in it. And that's why Ann Richards said, hey, let's have a commissioner of insurance that I appoint who's going to look out for the public interest too. Now, in your generation, the question will have to come up and be thought about. Is this the best way for us to administer the state? Should we continue to do it the way they did it back when Mr. Waddell was teaching me this course back in the dark ages? Or do we revise the way we do it? And that's your decision to make. Now, how are you going to make that decision? By the people you elect to represent you in the legislature. They're going to have to be the ones you go, hey, you're not looking out for my interest. The CEO, the chief executive officer of the agency, has the personnel, budget, and policy responsibility. Well, actually, the board has the responsibility for personnel, budget, and policy, but who's going to be recommending it to him? Now, I hope that most of you, by the way, how many of you have been to a Galveston College Board meeting so far? That is a very easy way to pick up 10 points. And guess when the next board meeting is going to be? Next Wednesday at 5:30. One of the things that's interesting to look at is the role of the president and the board. Do you think the board just comes up with all these proposals out of the blue sky? No. But at Galveston College in particular, we have a very good and very active board. They seek input both from the faculty and the administration and the public. And they have committees, and you're welcome to attend any of the committee meetings. I will broaden that particular assignment to where if you want to attend one of their committee meetings, you can do that. And generally, and if they have a really important issue, they'll have a committee meeting right before the board meeting. And the board and the president discuss it together with whatever else needs to be done. I've attended a number of those meetings. Faculty are welcome. You get a feel for how it runs. Okay. I'd like to make it a required assignment, but because of people's work schedules and other life, that's not an option. Can't do that. Now, who oversees, who watches the watchdogs? That's called the oversight function. And in Texas, the oversight function is performed at the executive level, but particularly at the legislative level with standing committees, the Legislative Budget Board, the Legislative Audit Committee, and then the Sunset Commission. This is not a question that most of you could answer. How many states have effective sunset commissions or effective sunset revision agencies? Interestingly enough, the answer is less than 10, 10 out of 50. Texas pioneered, I think I told you, I'm not sure because I've got three classes of this. One of my old professors, unfortunately she's dead now, Dr. Janice May. In fact, only one of the professors that I had at the University of Texas is still alive. And that's because he's younger than I am. When I went back and worked on my doctorate, I was 10 years older than Dr. Prindle. But she said, you know, there needs to be a formal process by which we review agencies, and if they're not cutting it, they go out of existence automatically. So what's unique about the Texas system is, with the exception of institutions of higher education, they all have, like the cartons of milk in the refrigerator, an expiration date. And if the legislature doesn't renew them, they have to be eliminated, merged with another agency, or some other option. I had a student ask me, how many agencies have actually been abolished by the Sunset Commission in the 20 years that it's been working? And the answer is pretty limited. There have only been a handful that have been eliminated. totally eliminated. But the number that have been reorganized and restructured is significant. Now, if you know somebody's watching you carefully, is your behavior likely to change?
Yes.
If you're an agency head and you know that you can just continue to blow off the public interest, you're not going to be around in a few years, is it going to change your behavior? Probably the most significant contribution the Sunset Commission has made is getting agencies to clean up their act. God may be watching you, but he's not going to abolish you in 10 years. Sunset Commission will. All right, we've been there, done that. All right, let's change gears real fast. I'm watching the clock too. How many of you are aware that four functions employ 90% of the people of Texas? That is 90% of the agencies. Higher education, the biggest, social services, health and human relations, transportation, and public safety and corrections, and mostly that's the Department of Corrections, to be honest about it. That's 90% of the employees. So when you're thinking about this state government and what does state government do, by the way, do you know this is pretty well true in other states as well? The numbers will vary a little bit, but when you get somebody running for office who says, I want to eliminate 30% of the jobs, the federal bureaucracy, I mean the state bureaucracy, it's over too many people. You have to ask yourself, do you think he knows anything about how the state of Texas is run, administered, or what the people do? Now, can I extract a promise from you? If at some point in the future you were listening to some politician blowhard make a statement like, if I'm elected, I'll eliminate, you know, X percentage of the jobs or X percentage of the people, raise your hand and meekly ask, do you plan to get rid of higher education, health and human services, transportation, or corrections? Because that employs 90% of the people who work for the state government. Which one of those do you want? And I promise you, if they're trying to take a drink of water, they'll probably aspirate it. No. See, I know how dumb you think I am, but how dumb are you? Said, because back when I was in Mr. Waddell's class back in the Dark Ages, we learned that 90% of the people of the state of Texas work in four functions. You obviously didn't have that class. And you haven't obviously learned anything since you graduated from high school either. Oh, you don't have to say that, but feel free to do so if you want to. So does that PA after your name not stand for, what is that? No, never mind. In the one area that's kind of interesting, Texas does not have a statewide personnel system. Some states do, some states don't. Texas is the largest state that does not. And I had the task of writing a term project back for Dr. Janice May 50 years ago, roughly, in which I had to take the position of arguing that was either good or bad. I had to analyze both sides of it and then take a position. I won't tell you which side I took. But you know, when you compare states with them and states without them, you can't find a discernible difference. They operate differently, but you can't necessarily discern whether one's better or one's worse. Now, one issue that's likely to come up in the not too dim distant future, Angelique, is retirement. That's happened in Houston. Both the teacher retirement system of Texas is on very good solid ground. For that, I am exceedingly thankful. The employees' retirement system of Texas is a little bit shakier. It's not bad, but it's a little bit shakier. If you worked as a secretary for UTMB, which of the two systems would you be in? How many think you'd be in the employee's retirement system? How many think teacher retirement? Well, let me give you an easy way to keep it straight. If you work for a state educate, notice I said state, educational institution, or you are in a teaching position where you're funded by the state, you're in TRS. All other positions are ERS. Okay, so is UTMB an educational institution? Yep. Now you're a secretary, right? So which one are you in? TRS. If you work for an educational institution, or a chunk of your salary comes from the state of Texas for educational purposes, like a teacher, you're in TRS. TRS is three times as big as ERS. Look, figure out why. 35% of the employees of the state of Texas to begin with are in education, right? Am I a state employee?
No.
Nope. I work for Galveston Community College District. But does a significant chunk of my salary come from monies that come from the state of Texas?
Yes.
Yes. So I'm where?
Middle.
You're on both?
No. TRS. You can only be in one.
Well, didn't your time in the government transfer over?
It did. You have to transfer the transfer the years. It can go either way, but the one you retire from is the one that all the service has to be transferred into. I had 3 years service as a legislative aide. That was ERS, Texas Legislature's estate agency. But a number of years ago, those 3 years transferred into TRS. So although this is my 2 year service, although this is my 53rd year, 52nd year working for a institution which is in TRS, the 3 years I had when I was a legislative aide transferred into TRS. Mm-hmm. I worked part of a year for Houston Baptist College, which is not a state institution. But that year I worked in the legislature too, so.
Okay.
So although it's, I now have 55 years in teacher retirement. By the way, I was talking with some folks up there, they said, there's only 10 people in the state of Texas that now have more service in TRS than you. So I asked her, how much longer I have to do this before I become number one? She said, I can't tell you that. The state of Texas self-insures itself on health insurance, but it hires a private company to manage it. And it has been Blue Cross Blue Shield. It just went to United Health, and I got to change that. Budget, planning, authorizing, and accountability. The four steps, I'm going to ask you to know what the four steps in the budget process are, okay? Hint. Planning, authorizing, spending, and auditing. And we went through that in some degree of detail, did we not? Who's the biggest dog on the block on the planning side? The governor, the Legislative Budget Board, the Legislative Audit Committee, the comptroller. Now all of those play a role, don't they? Yes? No? But who's the big dog in the planning stage? LBB. No question. When it gets down to actually the appropriations phase, the legislature and the comptroller play a big role. Do you see anything on the spending side that correlates with the employment side? Same thing, isn't it? The percentages are different, but the rank is the same. All right, I got a silly question for you. What is a dedicated revenue? Is it the one that the Pope has blessed? or one that's been set aside by the Constitution or by statute for a particular purpose. Stormy, can I pick on you for a minute? This is a guess on your part. What percentage of the budget would you guess is already spoken for when the legislature meets? You say, she says 50. Anybody want to raise the bid? It's just under 90%. So you're a legislator. Now, you work for a living, you have a job. What percentage of your budget is dedicated for specific purposes before you ever get your paycheck or get your pay? I asked that question, and one student said 110%. Mm-hmm. 90% or so, by the time you do rent, all the things that you have to add up. Well, when the legislature meets, they're arguing about the pennies on the side, because constitutionally and statutorily, most of that money is already committed. Fair enough? When the legislature is trying to figure out how much money to give to the schools, there's a school funding formula. Now, they're talking about the formula and how it needs to be changed, because it's underfunding schools. Compared to other states, how does Texas rank in terms of funding for public education? At the top of the list or toward the bottom? Let's run through this very fast. Fees, federal grants. Hey, what percentage of the Texas budget comes directly or indirectly from the federal government? I will not ask you that specific percentage, but is it significant? That's just under a third. So when you see these politician blowhards, you're talking about, well, we'll secede. The first thing you want to ask them is, all right, where are you going to come up with all that extra money? And we aren't even talking about the defense budget. We'd have to have a defense budget, wouldn't we? Defense is not a part of the state budget, is it? But if we were to secede, all of a sudden we'd have to start worrying about all that money that we get from the federal government for the Texas National Guard, which wouldn't be there. Military bases. Not feasible. It's only something that politicians that think you're too stupid to know the difference would talk about. And we played with this. Revenue sources, taxes are about 50%. Federal funds, 32%. And the rest of it's pocket change, right? We spend it on education, health and human services, business, that's mostly transportation, and public safety, mostly corrections. We've already done that, haven't we? What is the main, biggest single source of funding for the state of Texas, folks? Aside from federal government. Various sales taxes, right? When you add up all the different sales taxes that we levy, sales tax, motor fuel tax, gasoline tax, it's two-thirds of all the money the state of Texas comes up with in taxes comes from the federal government, right? Now, you remember progressivity, regressivity? Okay, let's do it again. A progressive tax is one that, as your income increases, the percentage you pay increases. A regressive tax is one that falls most heavily on people who have low incomes. Sales taxes are generally regressive. So if the state of Texas depends exceedingly heavily, and it depends more heavily on sales taxes than any other urban state. Are we going to have a more regressive or more progressive tax structure? What do you think?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Progressive?
Regressive. You got it. Texas has the most regressive tax structure of any major urban state because we depend so heavily on sales taxes. Who ends up getting shafted? Well, pick up a mirror and look in it. And the face you see looking back at you answers the question. Now, why do you think that is? I have said on a couple of occasions in here that Texas follows the golden rule. Those that have the gold are the ones that make the rules. I think we've covered this. All right, I think I mentioned to you that one big glitch that you're going to be looking at, and you're going to be looking at it, is when we start paying off these criminal justice bonds. Now, I ain't talking about pocket change, people. I'm talking about $1 billion or more. The prisons are wearing out. Our population is growing, which means we need additional confinement space. It's not... Have you ever heard about a perfect storm where all the things conspire to make life really miserable? This is the big perfect storm in the Texas budget system. Now, I have a few little questions I'm going to run you through, and then I'll turn you loose to play in the traffic. What's the most important duty of the Secretary of State? Do you remember? And by the way, he shares that duty with 49 other state secretaries of state. Conducting elections. All the other duties of the Secretary of State are pretty ho-hum, routine, you know, communications with other states, extraditions, blah, blah. Go to sleep. All right, one we haven't covered. I'll throw this question up like a freebie. Anybody wants to answer it can. What is senatorial courtesy? Is it A, the tradition that members of the Senate open the door for each other? B, that members of the Senate refer to each other as the honorable, even if you think they aren't? That was B. Or C, a tradition that requires that any recommendation by the governor be approved by the senator in whose district that person lives. So, you're governor, and you would like to appoint X, Y, or Z, any particular person to a particular office. What's the first thing you do? Besides, ask them if they would like to be appointed. I know you know the answer. I think you said it, but they couldn't hear you. Come on, what would it be? Assuming you're a relatively intelligent governor, and you can't always make that assumption, but assuming you're a relatively intelligent governor, what's the first thing you would do before you publicly recommend appointing somebody? Yeah, check with the senator that whose district the guy lives in, right? If the senator won't approve them, what are your chances of getting them confirmed? What do you think, Stormy? That's right. Articulate what your body language just said. No, not I don't know, but not only no, but hell no. Remember I told you that one of my jobs as a legislative aide was checking with Senator Cole to find out if he was willing to go along with an appointment? The governor's appointment secretary would check with us, and if Senator Cole said no, that was the end of sentence. I actually went to a professional meeting one time where a guy was talking about the governor's appointment power, and he obviously didn't know a thing about senatorial courtesy. Talking about how strong the governor of Texas was because he had 100% of his appointees approved. Do you know anything about senatorial courtesy? Got a fish look. You know what a fish look is? How many of you have ever seen a fish look? No. I do that real well. Some of you do too, every time you pick up a test. If you don't know senatorial courtesy, you would think the governor just, man, never had a problem in the world, wouldn't you? But if he's smart, he doesn't make appointments he can't get confirmed. And most governors are at least that smart. And in fact, if it's likely to be a questionable appointment, there's a Senate Nominations Committee. Would you talk to the members, have your aides talk to the members of the Nominations Committee to find out if there's anybody who opposes it? And if you run into significant opposition, what do you do with that proposed appointment? You don't make it. I mean, all it takes, can you do math a little bit? What's 1/3 of 31? If there's 11 senators that oppose it, it's toast. The reality is, if there's more than 4 or 5 senators that oppose it, you don't want the flak. Does the president run into the senatorial courtesy issue? Actually, he does.